In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all
Oh, you betcha. Time to talk movies and more. Alan Adams joining us on the telephone line this afternoon. Hello, Al. How are you?
Well, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. How are you adjusting to this time change?
Not well. I hit a wall pretty hard this afternoon, I'm not one who necessarily adjusts to change just generally particularly well, and I always struggle just a little bit with the time change. Although I will say I do prefer this one to springing forward. I'm at the point where it's like, let's just pick a lane. I think the farmers will get over it. You know, the 14 that are left.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Absolutely. Yeah. I liked it this morning, walking the dog in the wee small hours and there was light out there, but yeah, I have a feeling that, sometime tonight I'm going to look at the watch and go, isn't it bedtime yet?
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I need to, it's like, oh, it's, wow, I should really go to bed. And you look and it's like, oh, it's 7:45.
Goodness gracious. Well, you're joining us over the phone. So what, you got some school things going on?
No, I'm doing a staged reading with in tandem with Penobscot Theater's Dramatic Academy. It's called Enough, and it's a series. It's a sort of nationwide thing that's happening. Where it's basically stage readings of 6 short plays that deal with the issue of gun violence. And this is something that had been on the books for some time, was rendered all the more timely by the recent events in Lewiston. And it's one of those things where Grace Livingston Kramer, who kind of runs the show over at DA, asked me to do it. And I was like, you know, and it's just one of those things where, yeah, absolutely. Like anything to sort of raise awareness about what has been and will continue to be for the foreseeable future, unfortunately, a pretty significant issue.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that tonight. I know you saw some films. Where do we want to start this week?
Let's talk about the documentary. I saw on Netflix. They dropped this weekend. Sly, which is a Sylvester Stallone documentary, and I wasn't sure how this was going to go. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, as someone who has a very deep-seated affection for some of the characters that Mr. Stallone has brought to life in his career, it's one of those things where it's like, do I really want to peek behind the curtain as far as Sly Stallone is concerned? Is that something that I really want to do? But I'll tell you, Rich, like, it actually turns out to be a pretty compelling watch. It spends a lot of time on his childhood, his younger days. And it was a lot of stuff that I didn't know, whether, you know, it's like, you know, born in Hell's Kitchen, to a, frankly, what sounded like a fairly abusive, household. Both sets of parents, didn't necessarily treat, Sly or his brother Frank, as well as they might have. And so you just sort of get to see this kind of, you know, the seeds of the sort of hard scrabble underdog, sort of bootstrappy kind of character that would, you know, shoot him to fame when he played Rocky. But like, you know, stuff like, did you know that Stallone was a prominently ranked a junior polo player in his youth? Because I sure didn't.
I had no idea.
Yeah, apparently, he was, like, his dad was into horses, and so, by extension, he was into horses. They were living in Maryland when he was, like, in his early teens, and he apparently was quite a gifted polo player, of all things. Not exactly what you expect from Sylvester Stallone. But, you know, and it goes up through, like...
Eye of the pony, rock!
But yeah, it goes through his process of, trying to break into the acting world, small parts in films and whatnot, like his struggles to get cast because of the way he looked and the way he talked and all of that. And And then just the idea of, well, if no one's going to cast me in something, I'll write something for myself. And hence Rocky was born, and just like overnight, he catapulted to this like incredible like level of stardom. And yeah, and you sort of follow along. We spent a lot of time with Rocky. We spent a lot of time with Rambo. And then, towards the end of the movie, we start talking about the fairly extended stretch there in the late 80s and early 90s when maybe Sly's choices weren't the best. Man, I tell you what, you're watching a movie and it's like, and all of a sudden you see a clip from Oscar and you're like, oh, right, that movie exists. Oh, yeah, remember when Sylvester Stallone tried to do a farce? You remember that? Was that
the one with Dolly Parton? No.
Oh, no, that's Rhinestone.
No.
which was also a terrible choice, but for different reasons.
Yeesh.
But throughout it all, like, he displays this kind of unexpected level of self-awareness. Like, just like this acknowledgement that, like, you know, things, you know, he got out over his skis. Like, he got too famous too fast and started making questionable choices. And he recognizes that those choices that he was making, like, you know, with hindsight, obviously, he's like, well, this, like, why did I try to do this? Like, why was it so important to me to try to prove to everyone that I could do all these other things when I already knew, and everyone already knew, that I could do these other things extremely well already? Which actually led to the birth of the Expendables franchise, which, you know, however you feel about it, the idea of bringing together a bunch of sort of, former action stars and sort of like relaunching them into that stratosphere is a pretty good idea. Like, I don't know that we needed, like, I think we're up to four of them now. I don't think we needed four movies, but like in terms of a base concept, it was pretty fascinating.
Well, yeah, when you've created two of the most iconic characters in the history of cinema, you know, it would be pretty easy, I think, to just walk away and go, well, okay, that's all I'll do.
Yeah, he really showed a desire to keep pushing. Like, he, like I said, self-awareness. Like, he straight up says, I didn't get the love and affection from my father that I wanted and needed. And so I sought it from audiences. I'm still seeking it from audiences. And it was like, wow, that is really profound and not the sort of like recognition you might expect from, you know, Rambo or whatever. But, and a great collection of talking heads, like Tarantino pops up a bunch. We get some stuff from Talia Shire, which is really nice. John Hertzfeld, the film critic Wesley Morris is featured pretty prominently. And of course, like, you can't make this movie without talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger. and Schwarzenegger has a lot of really interesting insight as well, because, you know, in a lot of ways, he and Stallone had their sort of parallel journeys. I think my favorite favorite Schwarzenegger bit, however, is when he officially confirmed the fact that he basically started a rumor that he was interested in the script for Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, so Stallone would take it.
I love it.
You know, which is like, that was one of those things where it's like, that was always sort of like, that had been hinted at, but I'd never heard it like expressly said from one of the parties involved. So it was really, that was really funny. But yeah, just like a really well put together documentary. It's pretty short. It's like, I don't know, about an hour 40. You know, it doesn't necessarily go as super deep as in some places. Like, his family is largely absent from it in a lot of ways, which, understandable. Like, I know, like, he lost his son pretty tragically. I'm sure he wasn't super interested in sort of revisiting that on camera or anything like that. But honestly, like, if you're a fan of the guy's work, like, it really, like, I was pleasantly surprised by how engaged I was.
Please tell me they have at least a brief clip from Escape to Victory.
You know, like, there were a couple that I was like, really? You're not going to give me Escape to Victory? You're not going to give me, like, Daylight? Like, come on. Like, we know he made great movies. Like, show us a little bit more of the garbage. And although, don't worry. There is a scene, included, where we get to see Estelle Getty staring down the barrel of a gun. And that is, you know, that is, that right there is worth the price.
There you go. Excellent. We'll look for Sly out there. What else did you get to see?
The other film I watched was, it's on currently streaming on Hulu, dropped this weekend, a movie called Quiz Lady. And it stars Awkwafina and Sandra Oh as sisters who are forced to try and pay off their mother's gambling debt. She's escaped the nursing home and fled to Macau. But the basic deal is they had a very troubled upbringing. And so since she was 4 years old, and the younger sister, that would be Awkwafina, has sort of stayed grounded through the daily ritual of the nightly ritual of watching her favorite TV quiz show. It's called Can't Stop the Quiz. And it's hosted by a guy named a pleasant bow-tied fellow named Terry McTeer, played in an absolutely inspired bit of casting by Will Ferrell.
Wow.
And it's so like she just like she watches it every night, and she's, you know, she works as an accounting firm, and she's very quiet, keeps to herself, doesn't have really much of a life. And then, you know, her sister, Jenny, played by Sandra Oh, comes blowing back in when mom flees the country, and they wind up stuck with, you know, with her debt on their heads, and they're trying to figure out a way to pay it off. Meanwhile, Jenny, who is staying with Anne because she doesn't have anyone else to go, surreptitiously films her sister watching the show, doing the thing that I myself related to very much, because I used to do this when I would watch Jeopardy with my family, answering the questions before the contestants on the screen would answer it. And so she, so she films this, puts it online, it goes viral, and then it's like all of a sudden, like the folks from the show are like, oh, we should have her on the program. And then a lot of like buddy comedy shenanigans happen, along with some relationship, you know, heartfelt relationship stuff between sisters and all that. As they sort of make their way to LA to get on the show and hopefully make enough money to pay off that debt. It's not going to be easy though, because there is there's a current champion who's gunning for the all-time winning streak record on Can't Stop the Quiz, played with smarmy deliciousness by Jason Schwartzman. He's excellent. Other great performers are in this. Tony Hale has a couple of scenes as a guy who runs the Ben Franklin Inn in Philadelphia, dressed as Ben Franklin. So there's a whole thing where he's pretending to be Ben Franklin. Holland Taylor plays Anne's next door neighbor. There's actually a very sweet cameo from the late Paul Rubens. It's a really great cast, it's a really sweet, fun movie. It's one of those films where this is heavy stuff we're dealing with here. There's a lot of ridiculous stuff, but a lot of really sweet sort of familial connection as well. The performances are great. Awkwafina is wonderful. Sandra Oh, who is like unfailingly excellent, like she's always great. Like she's really great here. Farrell goes. I went back and forth as to how exactly to describe how he plays this part. It's either Trebek crossed with Mr. Rogers, or it's Trebek only like 10 times more Canadian. And I'm not sure which one is the most accurate, but he's very sweet, and it's a very lovely sort of turn. The show itself, like the format of the quiz show, doesn't make a ton of sense, but you know, that's easy enough to overlook. It's just really a good time. You know, and watching these characters sort of play out these relationships, while also, you know, dealing with ridiculous subplots, including there's a dog napping at one point, And, you know, just like all this crazy stuff kind of crammed into an hour 40 minutes. So it's a little shaggy. Some of the subplots maybe don't need to be there. But honestly, like I had a really good time, like a lot of laughs, some poignant moments. And again, just an absolutely fantastic turn from the two women in the lead, which, like, let's be real, like, I'm always going to be here for that sort of representation on screen, and it's nice that a movie like this even got made, you know, let alone the fact that it's really, really good.
Well, it sounds excellent. That's on Hulu, you said.
That is Hulu, yes.
Nice. Got to check that out. Hey, I want to mention, and we'll talk more about it next week when you're on, but nothing wrong with letting people know well ahead of time so they can plan their busy fall schedule. The Improv Maine Festival coming back the weekend after this.
Yeah, no, November 17th and 18th, Friday and Saturday, two sessions, starting at 8 o'clock. It's going to be at the Bangor Arts Exchange. And we're pretty excited about it. We've got some old friends, coming back into the fold. The big one for me, our friend Dan Ryder and his group Teachers Lounge Mafia are coming back. They weren't able to join us last year, and that was the first festival they did not participate in. And so we really wanted to make sure that they got in, and happily they were all ready and raring to go. So that's happening. Our friend, good friend, and Central Maine Entertainment reporter, Dennis Price, will be bringing his Capital City Improv. The folks from Queen City Improv here in Bangor will be joining us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Very cool indeed. And before we let you go, too, want to mention you helped set us up with what's going to be a fun conversation tomorrow with your friend Eric Roy, who's going to be speaking at the university as part of the Libby Lecture on Natural Resources Policy.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Like I'm on the committee for this, and when we were sitting down to sort of discuss possible speakers for this year, Eric's name immediately leapt to mind. Like, he's someone who's like, he's a brilliant guy. He's a great, he's a wonderful scientist, but he's also very passionate about, environmental policy. Like, he's a self-styled water nerd. Like, he's been fascinated and really sort of almost obsessed with the study of water and ways in which to ensure its safety and potability and whatnot. He's going to talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial aspect of his work, starting the company Hydroviv in response to the Flint water crisis a few years back, and taking that from assembling stuff in his apartment and selling it at farmers markets to becoming a thriving e-commerce business, to getting an offer on Shark Tank, to eventually getting bought out by an international water conglomerate. While still remaining on as the chief scientist, so able to continue the work that he started, only with the even larger amount of resources granted him by his new situation. He's a real smart guy. He's a real compelling guy, and I think he's going to give one hell of a speech. So anyone who's listening and is interested, Wednesday noon, the Buchanan Alumni House on the University of Maine campus. Eric's going to be delivering the Libby Lecture, and I have no doubt that he's going to knock it out of the park.
And you'll get a chance to hear him tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, right here on Downtown. Alan, thanks as always. Great talk with you. Good luck with the reading tonight, and we'll check in with you next Monday.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
You got it. Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn.